This is the Empower Podcast. Released February 2nd, 2020. Episode 477. Eco Woke and Going Broke.
Welcome to the Amp Hour. I'm Dave Jones from the EEV blog.
I don't even recognize you anymore, man. It's been like a month.
Is this our 10th year?
No, it's not yet. Yeah, it is our 10th year, but it's August is the 10-year mark. We'll have celebrations
of
some sort.
Yeah, but it's the year.
The year of, yes. Right.
The year of the 10th.
Yes, that's right.
Anniversary.
And I'm Chris Gamble of Contextual Electronics, in case anyone didn't know that yet. If this is your first year of listening to the Amp Hour, you are in for a long backlog of pretty much what you're going to hear today. So, but we are going to try and shake some things up in our 10th year, I think. That's what you were getting towards?
We are. I was getting towards that. Yeah. Thanks for the segue.
Right.
Because we have read the feedback.
Yeah. You read a ton and you were commenting.
I read every single one of them. Yeah. I decided, yep, today I'm going to sit down and I'm going to, I don't grab coffee, you know, but I grab myself a protein drink and I sat down and I read every single comment. There were, I don't know how many there were, but geez, it was a lot.
It was 800.
1,000?
800 this year.
800. Yeah. I thought it was getting up there towards four digits.
We've had four digits in the past. I think we had 1,500 when we would give away a scope. For some reason, that number's a little different then, you know. You know, and the one question that wasn't on there that I think maybe you mentioned on the show, but we're going to ask in the future, what is people's favorite past episode with guests? Because that always, like, we'd like to compile a list somehow of, like, you know, just like, go and listen to this. Obviously, we had Chuck Peddle pass away a couple weeks ago. That was one of the top ones. But we'd love to know just like what kind of sticks out in people's minds, not with us, but with guests, you know. Mm-hmm. So what'd you find?
And wait, hang on. Also, I'd like to know if people want, well, I can leave it in the comments down below, I guess, but would people want to see people outside of our normal industry?
Mm, yeah. Like, give an example.
I don't want to give it away.
Do you have an auxiliary type of give an idea? Like, how far outside our industry?
No, it still might be engineering system related, but it might be, you know, somebody like just somebody who's not an engineer, they know about engineering systems.
Okay.
For example.
So they're like a train engineer.
Yeah, something like that. Yes. Anyway, yeah, like, do we have to stick to, what I'm asking is, do we have to stick to electronics as such?
The answer is, of course, yes and no. That's one thing that I pulled out of the survey is that, like, people would be like, oh, there's a lot of Dave and Chris shows. We like that. And then people would be like, there's a lot of interview shows. We like that. And people would be like, I like neither, and I like both. And, you know,
I like neither, and there's too much software, and there's, you know. And
there's not enough software. Yeah, right. And then, yeah, of course, it's just, it's always all over the place. We try and, you know, compress it down. But we appreciate everyone who actually took some time to fill it out. And we did send out, I don't know if you saw on Twitter, there was, we sent out 10 amp hour notebooks.
We did. I saw that. Yep.
We sent out a BM235.
How many of those got left? Did we actually blow our stock?
There's one left. There is one left.
One left. All right.
One left that has not been written in by me, I guess. Or you. I think you have one too.
Yeah, I've got one. Yeah. Yep.
And then...
rare as hen's teeth.
Yeah. Those are collector's items now. And then there's also... We sent out two Analog Discovery 2s as well. So, yep. Sent all those things
out.
And it was great. What else did you pull out of the survey? Anything else?
Yes, that obviously people complained about me not being on as much, and that's, true, guilty as charged. So, yes, I will be back more often.
He's back.
And although I've said this privately to you, and I've said it before as well, I don't necessarily like the three-way interviews. I find them, I personally find them a bit, messy.
Yeah, it's
so
tough.
I think
it's about building rapport. When you're doing an interview, it's about building rapport with a guest. And I think if it's like two people, Three people in three different locations, yeah. Yeah. And we obviously have delays, so we talk over one another.
And we have delays, so we talk over each other, and that's one of the problems. So it's bad enough when you only have two guests. Yeah. If you're wondering why we're always talking over our guests, it's because there are audio delays.
That's right, And I try and cut it out, but like, it's tough. I mean, honestly.
Oh, yeah, no, it's tough. Even small delays, like, you know, tens of milliseconds matter when you're doing a podcast, which is why we can't use Wi-Fi often.
Oh, yeah.
Or a slow internet connection with a bad ping, for example, that's going via a satellite or something. That'll just kill it. So, right.
Yep.
So all this Starlink business isn't going to help, is it?
It'll help a little bit, but it wouldn't help... It would help.
It gives everyone internet, but it doesn't. It doesn't enable.
Well, I think one of the things they talk about is like low latency for like priority stuff for traders and stuff like that. The ones that are they're going to be paying a lot of money extra to have priority packets, I'm sure. But that's not us. So
right. Yeah. No, but simply further to go up than it is to go via a landline.
I don't know if that's true. Actually, I mean, no, I guess
I think it is.
I think it'd be fewer hops, though. I think it'd be fewer hops.
Right. So. Oh, okay. Could be. Anyway.
Yeah.
So.
It'd be interesting to see like a direct line, you know, from Chicago to Sydney. Mm. Like, what is like as the satellite flies versus, you know, as the fiber goes.
Oh, well, no, satellite's definitely further. If you're talking about one side of the planet to the other, that satellite has to be a heck of a long way away. Right.
No. Well, it's got to be. Starlink is like a quilt of.
Yes. But they would have to hop from one to the other to get there. The lower the orbit you are, the limited distance you have between directly connecting two points.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So that's where a direct fiber to fiber connection from country under the ocean is better.
Yeah.
It's actually faster.
Yeah.
And
I wonder. We never actually
reliable.
Done a ping anyway. Like I don't know if your stuff goes up to like. Goes up to Asia first, and then comes over. You know,
it's most. We do have a direct trunk to the US.
Oh, you do,
Or a couple, but which path it actually takes, I don't know.
Okay,
I'm sure.
It's trippy to think about.
Ping it out.
It's like thinking about how the paths are happening in our brains at the same time. It's just like you don't think about it. Obviously, I can hear you. You know,
right?
I can talk to you, but I don't think about any of that stuff. So yeah.
So, yeah, so, and a lot of people said that they wanted more of the two of us bantering. So we may go away from the guest every second week. We may have more of the two of us. We just don't know yet.
Yeah, I think the short and the long of it is we're going to play around and try some new things.
Yeah.
We are going to bring back Chip of the Week.
Chip of the Week.
That is one thing that was brought up many times. And
call in as well.
Yeah, we're going to give that a shot.
Except we're probably going to do that a bit differently. We haven't fleshed out the details yet. We've had live call-ins before, but we're not sure if we'll do that. We might do that again, but they won't be live. We'll like semi-screen them.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll have like an answering machine type thing, hopefully, so where you can simply call in and leave a message, and we will play that on air, or maybe we'll even invite you on to ask your question live or something like that. Yep. We just don't know how that's going to work yet. But, yeah, quite a few people said they want that back, and I think that's a good thing for a podcast.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun when we tried it in the past.
Yeah.
You know, we tried to do the car talk thing, but it's a little tougher when people are all over the place. You know?
Because our episodes together, I think everyone probably agrees they could be hit or miss. You know, both of us agree that it's often hit or miss. You know, sometimes we'll finish the show, you know, catch you next time, and then we'll talk to each other afterwards and go, that was a good show.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we'll just know it was a good show. And sometimes we'll just go, oh, that's another one in the bag, you know. it's like,
definitely talk for an hour.
Yeah, too much umming and you know, we're just like sometimes we nail it and sometimes we don't. That's the nature of an unplanned show like this.
Yeah.
And they are hard to plan. Like, we could spend hours and hours planning this show and it's not going to go the way we planned it. So there's probably not a lot of point to that.
Well, we are going to keep talking about electronics and we'll try that.
Hopefully.
Yeah, we'll do that today, I'm sure. I am staring at the X chapters right now. I actually brought my book into the recording room. Have you been digging through it?
I've had it for a couple of months. I haven't had a
couple
real,
of months.
Like, I haven't sat down.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah. I got it early because I got a mention in there.
Yeah, I saw that. That's the first time I saw it. And then I'm
that's awesome. Yeah, I got a mention.
Where is
Thank
where
you
is the
much.
Mention?
I put it on Twitter. It's like page 300 and something.
Oh, 300, jeez. Like, anyways, this is the Art of Electronics X chapter. So this is, there's the third edition.
It just came out,
The third edition of the Art of Electronics came out a couple years ago now. It's the gold one. And then this is what, like the additional stuff that they wish they could have put in, but they didn't.
Yes, exactly. So it's just like, you know, more like a random, it's even more like if you thought the Art of Electronics was a practical, you know, oriented text, this is even more so.
That's right.
This delves into the more practicalities of, you know, millicapacitance in capacitors and, you know, and gate capacitance in MOSFETs and how it affects it in practical circuits and all that sort of, you know, juicy goodness and PCB traces and how they impact your designs. And
I'm going through page by page, and so I'm still in the passive section. But like, I really like the. I was in the capacitor section, and they kind of call out like, oh well, here's why it's good to use different types of caps in different scenarios, and they don't really cover that in the original text.
Yes, that's right.
And so, and then like things like aging and voltage variances and stuff like that. You know, so it's just like a lot of the way I was kind of reading it. It's like this is something that the grizzled old graybeard would be sitting next to and be like, you know, you got to watch out for this one thing. And then they would, you know, and that's basically what this part of the book is. It kind of feels like it's that watch out for, at least what I've done so far, of course.
Yeah, and there's tons of original research in there. Like, there's tons of characteristic curves where they'll, like, do shootouts between different diodes and different capacitors and different, you know, MOSFETs and things like that.
Yeah.
Like, this is the sort of stuff that I would, you know, that I used to do in my, back when I had a day job. You know, you would, like, okay, we need to choose the best 500-volt MOSFET,
right?
So you'd get a whole bunch of them and you'd test the various characteristics and you'd plot graphs and then you'd put it into a report and go, yep, we're going to choose this one because X, you know, and all that data never sees the light of day.
Right.
You know, it's never published. It's never, you know, it's just died away in somebody's journal at some company somewhere, you know, and this feels like they've just like opened up all their notebooks and they've just spewed out all this information. You know, it's great.
Yeah, yeah.
It is great.
Yeah, I'm trying to do a couple pages a day. I've been, it's actually been my train reading. So like when I got a train to go home at night.
Ah, right, nice.
So I'm the weirdo on the train reading about electronics. So it's good though.
And in nice hardcover form too.
Yeah, of
not that soft cover rubbish.
Right.
Absolutely brilliant. Anyway, yes, definitely recommended. You could even have this if you don't have the Art of Electronics, but why would you not have the Art of Electronics?
It's
anyway.
True. Dave, I just want to call out right now. We're talking about books. You and me together. We're talking about books.
Yeah, because it's not some bloody business book, you know? It's not
I got so many. You know how long it's been since we talked about books last? I've got so many we could talk about if you want to.
Oh, God. Here we go. And this is a lot of the complaints. Yes. Oh, Dave doesn't let Chris talk about books. People don't know about what's called taking the piss.
Oh, well, yeah.
Okay, this is what us Aussies do.
If they don't by now, this is a masterclass in it.
Oh, goodness. Man. My sarcastic, dry sense of humor and Aussie taking the piss just doesn't come across on radio, apparently.
Apparently.
Yeah, a lot of people just don't get it.
Yep.
Yep.
I do have other technical books that I've been digging into. I have an embarrassing confession.
Yes.
I didn't have Henry Ott's book.
No, there you go.
Yeah, so I finally bought it, and so I've started that too. I don't know what it was. I think it was just like the price. You know, like the $100 text for some reason on all these things, like they're $100. Even the Art of Electronics, I think it was like 70, 80 bucks. The X chapters, rather, was 70 or 80 bucks.
Yeah, it's not cheap.
And it's just like the psychological threshold where I'm like, I don't know.
I know. It's not quite impulse buy, is it?
It's not. That's exactly it.
You know, throw it in the shopping cart on DigiKey or, you know. Or
Amazon or whatever,
Booktopia or wherever.
Booktopia.
I don't know. That's an Aussie one, you know.
Right. Yeah, so that's another one on my list. I mean, and that's the other thing, too, is like they're dense. You know, like they're these dense texts, and I don't know, like the best way to get through them. I did read one of the self-helpy books that was talking about it, the SQ3R. method. You ever heard of that?
Oh, God, no.
It's basically like a way to self-learn. And
Right. You can add that to your black belt Kanban or something.
Kind of like that.
Right.
But it's actually kind of practical. It's like basically, so like in the X chapters, right, it's like one of the main things I pulled out of it. It's like, okay, so say you actually want to like really, really learn something technical. The idea is you go through, let me actually open it up. Sorry, I know this will be boring on air, but if you open up the table of contents, you're like, all right, I'm going to read about bipolar current mirrors today. And then like some of the subheadings below that are like a simple high-speed bipolarity current source, right? And that's like the name of the section. And so basically your notes that you would have beforehand is like, what is a simple high-speed bipolarity current source? Because then you're trying to answer your own questions.
Yes.
And then try and review that later. And I've just never – I had really bad habits, like studying habits as a student. And like – so this is like a self –
as bad as mine.
Well, I it's tough, right?
Study? What's that?
Yeah, I think that's what it comes down to. And I think that is like a way to self-learn that's kind of like proven method. So I've been trying that for the technical stuff. Mm. But it's still – it's, you know, it's a slog. And it's like unless you really need something, you know, in the moment, but then – you don't know where to look in the books and stuff like that. So I don't know. It's tough. It's tough reading the technical stuff sometimes.
Right.
Tougher than the sci-fi stuff I read at
least. So which is book of the week? I guess X chapters.
Yeah, it's totally X chapters. Yeah.
Yeah. You know,
do you know which chapter? So you said it's like page 300. Which section is it in? The EEV blog reference?
Oh, God. Look, I'll go to my Twitteries.
No, that's that easier.
And,
okay.
And I'll go to my Twitters and I'll go to media because I posted a photo of it.
Okay.
So I'll be able to scroll down. I've been logging the temperature from my aircon
because it's been
mysteriously turning on. Yeah, I think it's something to do. Like, there's got to be like some glitch on the mains or something that's causing the controller to switch on. Here it is. Found it. It's page doesn't have page numbers. Yeah, it's weird. I think the book has bugs in it. It's like only like a.
Maybe it's your
book. 2/3 of the pages have page numbers.
Well, you had like an
early
copy too, so.
I got an early copy, so maybe it's, yeah.
Okay.
Actually, I didn't even say which page it was.
All right, well, it's an Easter egg for people to find then.
Yes. It's in the, 9X.5.
Oh, there we go. Okay.
9X.5 PWM for DC motors. And,
great.
Yep.
People
so
can
they
go find
me.
That there. Yeah.
Fantastic.
So, aircon, you haven't like built like a monitoring system for this at this point? I mean, like you could probably just set up a camera to take a picture of like the, are you sure that the thermostat isn't just ticking on at that point?
No, I literally switch it off. It's one of these digitally things, but I switch it off when I go out, and that's obvious from the temperature graphs. And when I come in the morning, it's switched on, and I can see it like 3 a.m. in the morning. The aircon switched on. You can see the temperature ramp down and then do its little wiggle 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 year at the bottom where it actually oscillates. You know where it's just switching off and on, and you can see that. And it like switched on at midnight or 3 a.m. in the morning, and.
Do you have a cleaning person? Is it possible that?
Nope.
Okay.
No, there's a cleaning person that goes down the corridor, but they don't go into individual units. No, I don't have anyone cleaning here. I do it myself. You know, I'm self-employed.
So it's filthy in there.
And,
is that what I mean?
And so, I actually got two captures of it, and they both switched on at a smidgen under 25 degrees Celsius for you Yanks.
Mm.
And I went, aha, but correlation does not equal causation.
That's right.
So as it turns out, no, I had it happen again. And I had it go up over 25 degrees and it didn't switch on. So it's like, no, it's not that.
Yeah. Okay.
That was just a coinkydink. So, yeah, mysterious. Although I was probing in an unrelated thing. I was actually probing some mains. I was actually probing bridge rectified mains for a thing that I'm working on. And I saw these little oscillations. You know, there's the half-wave rectified signal. And then all of a sudden there'd be these high-frequency oscillations on there. And that's likely, not like real high-frequency, like only like a couple of hundred, maybe a kilohertz or something like that. I didn't actually measure the exact frequency. But there's all this, like, you know, like 10% of the signal was this superimposed higher frequency sine wave.
Oh, sine wave. Okay, I was going to say, it's not like the digital Like the
no,
thing where they
it's
layer
not
on top.
Noise. It's yeah. It's
oh no,
and
no,
it's
no noise.
Superimposed.
I meant you know like the power line what? Communication stuff you can do. I thought it might have been
yes,
that.
Which is designed for switch. We have that here in Australia. I don't know about in America, but it switches on off peak water heaters. We have this. You know the power company superimpose this signal. I can't remember what frequency it is. I think it's a couple of kilohertz.
Yeah.
They superimpose it on there, and so they can turn the water heaters off and on in peak times and stuff like that.
Oh, that's cool.
So yeah, that's part of that system, and that's been known to interfere with stuff. So,
oh really? Okay.
Yeah. It's you know quite common to put filters on products that are susceptible to this. You have to put a mains, you know, a fairly decent mains filter on there to filter out all these control signals coming from the power provider.
Right.
So,
right.
Yeah. Anyway, that's dodgy as. I don't know what's going on there, but yeah. Had another leak in the, you know, water leak in the lab.
Oh, yeah?
Just before Christmas,
like ceiling,
yeah.
Ceiling coming in kind of thing?
Ceiling's coming in, yeah. Ceiling tiles destroyed, you know, carpet soaked again. And, yeah, it turned out to be a blocked line in the, it was a blown fan in the aircon. So the aircon was still working, but apparently some fan that de-ices it or something stopped, and it just all this condensation built up on the outside, and there's this giant drip tray under it.
Yeah,
but the drip tray filled up, and then the drip tray overflowed, and yeah, not good. Luckily, I just have it serviced, so I didn't have to pay for that.
Oh, that's good. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, it's part of the lease agreement. You know, you got to maintain the aircon. Otherwise, it's your fault if it goes.
Yikes.
Up.
Yeah. Well, speaking of temperatures rising and falling, what about the China right now in the coronavirus?
Oh, yes. Oh, we have to talk about this because, I guess, luckily, in quote marks, it's happened during the Chinese New Year when China was already shut down and people had already planned for the Chinese New Year shutdown, and we've talked about that many times on the show, how that could really impact, you know, R&D and businesses and stuff like that, because it's very common to shut down for weeks at a time. You know, you just don't do something in, you know, early to late January in that involves China. You know, it's just...
I definitely pulled... So one of the boards I was working on, I basically said, like, look, I normally would have sent this out. It's like a pretty simple board, you know, a lot of the same parts on it kind of thing. It would have been really simple to send out. I had sent it out once before, and I was like, the timing was just
to
like...
To be assembled or...
To be actually, like pick in place and everything, yeah.
Oh, pick and to be assembled, yeah.
Yeah, and I was like,
but
you know
But you're in the US. You've got lots of places in the US that do that.
There's a lot of that will do it, but they're not... It's,
they're
you
not
know, fast...
Super cheap China.
Fast speed, or what is it? Quick, high quality, or or cheap.
Choose one. Yeah.
Choose two, I think, but yeah.
Yeah, right. Cheap, high quality... And fast.
Yeah, right. And so anyways, a lot of the ones that are fast around here are great, but they're just really, really expensive. And this is not an expensive product. So,
sure.
So I was like, look, I'll just do it. You know, like I'll just, I got the pick and place up and running at my workspace. And then that didn't work. and then I was the pick and place.
Nice. So all that time wasted setting it up was just wasted.
Well, yeah, I ate those hours myself. It was, you know, a reintroduction and a relearning that, like, oh, yeah, it's not always worth it.
And in that time, in half that time, you could have just assembled the board yourself.
Oh, totally, yeah. And it was very frustrating to do that. I should have done that math beforehand, but I didn't. I was too focused on that. I will say it was better this time of, like, going back to the Neoden. That was – the software was much less of a problem. Like, getting up and started again, I was really nervous that I, like, forgot how to do everything. But a really nice person at my workspace kind of helped me remember some of the numbers and stuff like that. And then I actually, my process is a little different because they have this really weird method of like component one is your 00 and then everything's referenced off that instead of like off a fiducial. And
that's interesting.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan
of it. Component one is your reference. No, I don't like that. Because what the center of the loaded component or the center of the center of the pad for the first component.
Center of the loaded component. So like usually it's like
the loaded.
So it's like a capacitor.
Then if the first one's off, then your reference for everything else is off.
Everything is in
because
relation
there's
to
tolerance
that.
In the placement. There's tolerance in the placement of your first
part. Oh, no. So this this is just the reference coordinates, right? So in KiCad, what I do is I go and I say everything. So like the center of C1, which is my first component, is 0, 0. And then everything, you know, there's a capacitor that's then maybe like 10 millimeters away from that. Okay, now that's X10, Y0. And then the machine then takes that and says, okay, well, where are the fiducials in reference to that 0, 0 component? And I have to go calculate too. So
okay. Oh, right. So it does include the fiducial at least.
Yeah, yeah. And so it's like, it's all just a little, you know, kind of wonky. You know, and because I can pick where 0, 0 is on in KiCad, that helps a lot too. But it's just a quirky system. Anyways, all that was actually fine. It was actually this LED that I'm using has like this weird like kind of like depression. It's like one of the larger size LEDs, and it has like a depression, and so it's got like this cup, you know, it's like a epoxy filled LED, and so it's like a cup, and so it's like creating like this pressure there where the pick and place just like won't let go of it, you know, because of the size of it.
Right. It's not, and you've got maybe the wrong type of head to pick that up. Yeah,
something like that. And it was just like, I just tried and I gave up, so.
And yeah, you've got to be careful with LEDs in pick and place machines. I've been told that if you don't choose the right down pressure as well, you can actually break them. Because they're like an epoxy top on them. They're one of those parts that do break a lot if you don't get the because one of the settings for your pick and place is your downward pressure.
That you
actually put on it, and LEDs can be susceptible to that. So just be careful you don't come a gutter there.
Yeah, and I'm sure that's what I was doing wrong. That I was not. I kept adjusting the pressure more and more, and they're like that. Really, the height, you know, because they got like a springy release, and. Anyways.
This is why you shouldn't do pick and place. Just leave it to people who do it every day.
No, totally, totally. And I would, but it was just like by that point.
I know, China shut down. So
China shut down. Yeah, and it was really.
So let's. Let's talk about that. Like here's, you know,
well,
here's
it's still
the
shut down, and it's going to be shut down for a while. Coronavirus. And you know.
Yeah, they have told companies in lots of regions now to stay shut down for a while. You know, for at least the rest of the. You know, and there's quarantines. EHL, the courier which I use for all my couriers, and that's common as mud in China. They are now not going into certain provinces in China. So couriers are shut down, even though couriers are and freight planes and freight trucks and things like that are much easier to quarantine and control than us pesky humans who hop on a plane and then just scatter with our coffee. Bloody, you know. Pesky humans. They're impossible to control, but you know, like courier, like because often there'll only be a couple, you know, there'll be the pilots on the plane and that's about it, pretty much. So it's, you know, it's fairly easy to control cargo flights, but even those they've shut them down. And they're starting to progressively shut them down. So it's not
Should say we're glad that they're taking precautions, of course, like from a from a health perspective.
After a bit too late, but they're taking it seriously.
I think that's great. I mean, like I think that, you know, like public health crisis, I think it really just kind of like highlights like how interconnected a lot of, you know, supply chain is. Not a lot of all of, right?
Oh, people,
you know?
Don't realize. They don't. I mentioned this on the forum last night. People do not realize the infrastructure, the transport and distribution infrastructure involved in our everyday life, let alone, you know, or the supply of products to be manufactured. Yeah. It's just insane.
Yep. I always think of that scene in the beginning of Castaway, you know, like Tom Hanks' character's working for FedEx, I think, maybe UPS.
Yes.
And he's got like, he like ships like a clock. And I just think about like the stress that those people must feel. I think we've talked about it on here too, you know, but like just the stress of like getting a thing somewhere in a certain amount of time is like, ugh, you know.
I know.
Very high tension.
That's their business, you know.
Yeah, and totally. That's why they charge a lot for it.
And they have operational procedures in place to do it, you know. Yeah.
But they can have it. That's what I'm trying to say.
Right, yeah.
Pick and place people can do pick and place. I can do
our farty novelty gadget on time or for our audience, our latest Chip of the week.
Chip of the week. What is chip of the week?
On time.
Because it will be coming from China, right?
It will be coming, ironically. I don't know where LCSC is. Where are they? In the which province are they in? Does it tell you?
Well, they're attached to...
Shenzhen. Their name is Shenzhen. Yeah.
Right, but I mean that they're part of JLC, right? So they're the same parent company.
Yes. So, yeah, where are they? Technology park expected, 350,000 square meters.
Mm.
Wow, yeah. They've got their own technology park. Not just one building, a technology park.
Yeah, but that could be like a multi-floor building kind of thing, you know what I mean?
I'm looking at, well, they've got like an artist's impression. Expecting 2019. Well, it's 2020 now, so maybe
they're there.
Yeah.
Anyways, what
10,000 square meters.
What
anyway,
is the chip?
I'm interested in the technical details of the warehouse. Like,
do it later, Dave. We haven't had a chip of the week in years.
No, I'm going to leave people hanging. Their in-use warehouse is 10,000 square meters, but their new one under construction near Shanghai, there you go, is 60,000 square meters. Mm. Fully automated. Ooh.
Yeah. Yeah.
They spent 500 million RMB on it.
Divide by
wow.
six.
And they reckon they're dropping their rate from 4 hours to be like packing, you know, picking and packing in 4 hours turnaround to 1.5 hours turnaround. So
you don't need to advertise for them, Dave. Come on, man.
I just like this. The logistics of this stuff fascinates me.
Hmm.
It's absolutely fascinating. I know you don't care, but you know.
No, I care a little bit, but I'm waiting for the chip, man.
the chip of the week. Chip of the week
chip
is
of the year.
A Tontec. Tontec. Everyone's heard of Tontec, right?
Never heard of them before today.
Never heard of Contec. No, me neither. I'm not going to. Anyway, Tontec. I had this on my mailbag as well. TTP223 is the generic number, but you can get, you know, several variants of it. And it is a SOT 23, six pin SOT 23, none of that three pin rubbish, six pin SOT 23. Where's my data sheet? Here it is. A touchpad, touch sensor detector IC. So it's a controller IC that just has one touch key. So if you need one touch key on your product, And you don't want like a clicky one. You want like a capacitive touch sensor because you want to get, you've got like a waterproof panel or something and you want to, you know, be able to touch through that or something like that. And you've got no touch sensors on your micro. Then this little jobby for sub 10 cents is fantastic.
Yeah.
And it's got various modes. You can set, so basically it's just got one input for the touch sensor, adjustable sensitivity from 1 picofarad to 50, and when it powers up, it adjusts itself, adjusts and stuff like that. And it generates a nice debounced output,
yeah,
which you can choose, which you can pin select either, active high, active low. And it's really quite cool. And then you just feed that into a regular input of your micro. It can be either a regular input that's polled or interrupt driven, or it can be a wake up interrupt driven pin on your micro. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you've got a power button, a touch sensor power button that you want to wake up your micro with, then this is really cool.
This is great. So, this is great. I mean, basically, this kind of removes the need to have software. You know, like the finickiness of some cap touch software stuff. It's great. And you know, you can put it onto older products too. It's great for like a toolbox type part because of that.
Yep. And it's probably, I know a lot of micros have built-in touch controllers these days, and it's like taken for granted that a lot of them do. But even if you do have that, let's say, for example, where I said if you want a power button, a touch sensor power button that then powers up your micro later, yeah, you can use the built-in touch sensor on your micro, but it's going to chew more power.
Right.
Right?
Polling or something like that.
Yeah,
right.
This thing's only going to take 2 microamps, right? And then you can have a MOSFET switch then turn on your micro and start up your product.
Mm-hmm.
So really, you know, that is the extent of the standby current of your product is 2 microamps with this little jobby. You know, I'm not going to claim it's the lowest power, but you know, maybe there are others micros out there that will do lower with touch sensor interrupt wake ups, perhaps.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just really cool, and it just works. Like you don't have to dick around, and
You've actually tried it too.
I've actually tried it, and it does work.
That's great.
And it does. I like spilt some water on the sensor, and it does actually trigger when you put water on there and stuff like that. So
nice,
yeah.
Nice. That's great.
Yep. And it's got auto calibration and stuff like that. Yeah. And it'll recalibrate after power on, as I said, or it'll if you touch the key for 8 seconds, or if you haven't touched it for 8 seconds, it'll do recalibration periods, and you can select all that sort of stuff. It's really neat.
By chance today, I was searching through some circuit types, and I stumbled upon your latching to momentary, or other way around, I guess, momentary to latching circuit that you had from back in the 200s of the EV blog stuff.
Oh, yes. I still get emails about that today.
Soft latching, right? Soft latching.
Oh, yes. And it was called the world's simplest soft latching power circuit or something,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
Something like that. And a lot of people email me bragging, I've got a simpler one. You know? Like, yeah, good on you.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's a great little circuit, too. I mean, yeah. I like that it's, I mean,
yeah.
Basically, I was going through somewhere I was trying to find a push button, you know, like, going to a latching push button is like really expensive and they're bulky and stuff like that. So,
oh yeah, right.
You know, something like you showed is great for that kind of thing.
Some people have emailed and said, "Hey, I can't get it working. It's got all of these sorts of problems." I'm like, "Well, you know, I don't know. Like, you can't troubleshoot by email.
Yeah,
you can't do it. I get so much email. Like even if I had the time to individually troubleshoot one on one with you for something, like you just can't do it.
Yeah."
Like, you know, you can give them a couple of pointers to here or there, but you can't, like, no, nothing beats sitting right in front of the product. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've had to do a lot of troubleshooting over email now for clients and stuff like that. And like,
of course, yep.
I think the number one thing I always do now is I first say, can you send me a picture of your setup? Don't tell me anything about it.
No.
I just want to see a picture first. Because I'd be like, oh, you know, actually, you don't have there's no chip on there.
Right.
And it happens, like, you know, like some, you know, maybe it was a poorly assembled board by myself or, you know, something happened. Or like there's just, oh, there's actually no battery or, you know, the wires are backwards.
Right.
Or, you know, it's just like that we're such visual creatures that, you know, I need that personally in order to troubleshoot anything. And then I've tried to do by video too, and that's always really tough.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. You never watched Arrested Development, have you? The show?
No.
There's a character on there where it's like he has like a surrogate who's wearing like a hat and like walking around. So basically, one of the characters, it's like a joke where he's like controlling this guy that walks around with a camera on his head, and it's like it's basically like Google Glass, right? You know, like to bring up the old standby joke. But like there is actually like if you could like control. An Android would be best, but if not that, then a human that would be like, you know, like you have a camera on your forehead or like a, you know, a camera where you're looking, where that person's looking, you just tell that person what to do. That'd probably be the best, the next best thing. And even that would still suck, you know?
It would.
Just remote troubleshooting is just really tough, you know? It's just.
And that brings up, I can remember a story. When I used to sell kits, you know, back in the day, right? So, you know, I send them a kit of parts, and this was 25 years ago, right? It's a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I got a, was it an email or was it a letter? I can't remember because I was like troubleshooting by letter back then when you had to lick a stamp and actually
95,
reply.
Folks. Right. There was limited email access.
Yep. And he said, I've thoroughly checked this. I've inspected every component. There's a problem with your design. It does not work.
No.
And I'm going to ship it back and you're going to fix it under warranty. You know, and it's like...
I mean, it's very optimistic.
Yeah, I know, right? So he assembled all this, and he swore black and blue that it was nothing that he did, right? And so he ships it back to me, and or it might have just turned up. It might have just turned up in the mail with a nasty note on it saying, "You will repair this under warranty." And so I just like got the board and just like the first 10 seconds of looking at it, didn't even have to power it up. I just got a post-it note with a big arrow saying, "Here it is, dickhead," and shipped it back to him.
What was it?
And it was like the 78 LO5 voltage regulator was in backwards in the TO92 package.
Yeah.
Like, come on.
Yeah. That is. I think that's a good lesson for kit makers to print markings on things too. Like markings are really important for. I mean, it's so tough for people that are beginning, right? I mean, like, I really do feel for them. Like, it's like eight pin package. Like, why does it matter if it goes one way or another, right? But it's like, oh, no.
But it's on the silk screen. It's got a flat side to it and then a half circle on the other side. You know?
Yeah,
it's like,
yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Anyway,
so
yeah,
you're not in the kit business still, huh, Dave? That's
no, I'm not in the kit business anymore.
Yeah. Oh man.
Yep.
That's tough.
Yeah. That's why, you know, companies like Artifruit and stuff like that, they just go to the forum.
Yeah.
Go to the forum.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, they have great forums too. Like, they're very people that are on there are helpful and stuff.
Oh, even the employees will be on the forum.
Yeah, of course.
I'm sure I haven't been on there, but you know, I assume they are.
Yeah, they are.
Just
like
I'm on the forum. You know.
Yep.
Yeah.
But I think that it shares it. Yep.
Yeah, because I've actually got get so much email that I've got a template reply, you know, a thing. So if somebody sends me a technical question, and if it takes me 2 seconds or something, or it takes me 30 seconds, I'll reply to you. But most cases, no, I've got this form email that basically I'll reply back to them saying, look, sorry, but I get hundreds of these emails and I can't possibly spend even 10, 15 minutes on your one email just helping you.
Right.
One person out of my 700,000 audience, you know. And if I spend 15 or 30 minutes replying to your technical question, that only helps you. But if you go to the forum then and ask there, you'll almost certainly get a better and quicker response than you'll get from me.
Yeah.
You know, because I don't know everything. Surprise.
Right. I knew that, Dave. That's not a surprise to me.
And some, there'll be an expert on the forum. They'll help you out. Even I might help you out on the forum, right? Because I'm the number one poster over there.
Yeah.
And then that doesn't just help out you. It helps out everyone else who searches for that same question.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it shows up in the search results. So it's like, it's like this one-on-one thing is just, you know,
It's just a bad math, right?
I just can't possibly do it.
Yeah.
You know, I've spent the last 30 years doing that.
Right.
Right? When back before, like, you had to, as I said, I had to hand write a reply and stick it in an envelope and, you know, put a stamp on it. Right? It's like, and it helps out that one person. And sometimes I'm still happy to do it, but it could suck away my life totally.
The only time I use stamps anymore is when I have to send in tax stuff like I did today. That's the only time I think I use stamps ever anymore. I can't imagine having to do that for like communications and things like that.
Yeah, I know. Well, that was the thing. And then faxes came in. Yep. Do you ever have a polling? And do you ever personally own a fax machine?
I never did, no. I mean, we had like multi-center. When I was a kid, you know, like we had a printer-fax combo.
No. You're too young.
It's okay.
Hands up in the audience if you remember polling, fax polling. Do you know about fax polling?
I do not.
Christopher J. Gammer.
I do not, Dave.
You do not. Let me educate you in the ways of pre-internet. Back before web pages, I had my own web page in quote marks on my fax machine at home. So what you do, this polling feature, right, is that you would have, like, you know, you could have like, you know, 20, 30 pages of like I had like a product price list.
I was going to say a manifesto. It sounds like something a manifesto would be on.
It's manifesto. Yeah, exactly. And you would scan that into the fax machine and then that would hold, you know, it could hold up to 10 pages in memory or whatever. And then people could dial into your fax machine and poll it and actually automatically get that price list or that information sheet or whatever it is from your faxes. So it's like looking up a web page.
Yeah.
It effectively was your web page before the internet, before the web came along.
Yeah,
you know,
good.
So this was like,
great.
You know, because the web was invented in 93, I think. So this was like, pre-93, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And then, and as soon as the web came along, it just almost died.
Well, I'm sure even as
the
web was getting adopted too, right? But
It took a couple of years. Maybe 95 polling fax machines sort of like died out. But from the late 80s to early 90s, that was the way that you would get information from companies. You would dial in and, you know, often you had to keep trying because, like, my phone would just keep on ringing. I had a separate line just for that. And so I had two phone lines, separate line just for that because, you're like, you know, you didn't want to interrupt your modem when you're talking to the BBS, you know.
Of
that'd
course.
Tie up your line.
Right.
So, you know, so I had it open, the fax machine line open, and it'd just be, you know, I had to set it on silent, you know, because it'd be ringing, but you could see the lights flash and people are dialing in all the time. I had dozens of people a day dialing into my fax machine.
I mean, I don't miss that age at all, man. Like,
it's great.
I mean, yeah, it's like it's fun to look at from afar, but damn, like, You know, you and I are talking from like thousands and thousands of miles away right now with very little lag.
Yeah, right. Yep.
Yeah.
It's nuts. Yeah. Anyway, yeah, there were the days. Before the web.
Before the web.
Ah, young whippersnappers.
You know, even modern web stuff doesn't work either. I don't know if you saw, Particle is deprecating their mesh. I don't know if you've knew anything about it.
And you used to work for Particle, right?
That is incorrect.
that's incorrect. Who did you work for?
I work for Hologram, which is a quasi-competitor of Particle.
Oh, okay. Right. Sorry, I'm mixing them up.
It's okay.
Right.
I like Particle. I've used Particle on client projects before. You know, they're good service. But basically...
They're gone tits up, huh?
No. The company's still around. They're still...
Right, but they've discontinued their thing.
Just the one thing. So here's the idea. So they had three things that came out. They were all named after noble gases, boron, argon, and xenon. And basically on all of them, they had an NRF 52840, which is a very solid little chip. And so it would have the 52840 and then either by itself, and then it would have a cell modem, or it would have a Wi-Fi modem. Excuse me. And basically, the idea was you could have a cell modem. That was kind of the idea. You had I think it was the argon. You have a cell modem. It talks to this 52840, and then it can mesh over the 802.15.4 protocol using Thread, I think it was. Mm-hmm. There's a blog post we'll link in about all this stuff. But the idea was that it's just really tough to set up these networks, you know. So basically, having these like self-healing, each node kind of identifies itself on a network, and then is able to pass along packets, and if one of the nodes goes down, it says, oh, no worries, I got all these other connections over here. And after about a year of trying, they said, nope, we're not going to do that anymore. So the hardware's still around, but if you have a Xenon, which is the Bluetooth the Bluetooth chip only that could only do, only could be a node on the mesh network, they said, you know, we'll give you a refund on store credit, and then you can go buy something else if you want to. So yeah, it's interesting to see. I mean, I keep hearing about
it. Does this leave customers in the lurch? Their systems just stop working? What happens? Or if you've already purchased their system, does it work independently of them?
So it's going to stop getting updates in, I think, 2021. I think mid to early 2021. And then, you could go and develop it yourself, but it's just they're not going to push the updates anymore. So the way that Particle stuff works in the first place is it has an OS that's like loaded on all their devices. So most of their devices have an STM32F2 on it. And then, you know, usually some external thing like a uBlox cellular modem or a Wi-Fi chip from TI or something like that. And so that's like the Photon and the Electron and a lot of the other things that are out there. But the idea is that they have an OS that you then... It's not scripting language, but it's effectively a scripting language because it's basically like Arduino-esque code that then gets compiled down. But it's all running on the OS, and then they have like background tasks that are running. And it's really a real-time operating system. It's not a true OS, but it's, you know, they got background tasks operating that then can do like network stats, and they can, you know, monitor a lot of things and talk to the network and also handle firmware things. So that part is actually great. Like it's, you know, if you go to the Particle site and you have, you know, you want to make a change to your sketch, you just change one thing, click the button, and then like, you know, it'll just magically upload the firmware, which is, you know, not an easy thing to do. Something Hologram used to do too on their products, but you know, it's a lot of firmware overhead to do these kind of things.
Right,
making sure you get the right data, CRCing everything, whatever.
So customers aren't necessarily left out in the cold, but maybe long term they are.
No, so the idea is, so that still works, right? So now the newer stuff,
yeah,
right? So the STM32 stuff is their older stuff. The newer stuff is NRF52 based. The newer stuff, the NRF52 is the processing unit in this case. So it's running the OS on there and stuff like that. But so it's still capable of doing it. It's just it cannot mesh. That's the main thing.
Right, okay.
Yeah. And so the only one that's
therein
really...
lies a warning about, you know, choosing solutions like this.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think it's mesh technology. There are things that do mesh, right? So I think Zigbee can do mesh. I think what's the one? Or XB maybe? I don't know. One of the brand names that's out there. They have, you know...
Oh, there's Ant as well. I think Ant might be able to do it.
Yeah, I'm not sure about the...
Not sure. Yeah, yeah,
there was one commercial one, but I thought it was like XP or someone like that. But basically, the more generic the solution tries to be, the harder it is, right? So it's like if you're buying something that's... Say you pre-buy a solution, like an IoT solution that has like a master node that has like a cell modem on it and then like 100... You know, you buy a package that has 100 subnodes. Okay, that's probably going to work, right? It's pre-configured and whatever. Mm. They're all, maybe even they have numbers, they're pre-set up, there's something like that. But if you now have to like set up a network dynamically all the time, that's just a really tough thing. Yeah. That's a really tough problem to solve.
And it's only going to last for another year because come 2021, they're going to discontinue network management features and stuff like that. So so it's another one of these things that sucks, you know? I mean, but that's the risk of...
So I think this is just really what it comes down to is it's like you're buying into an ecosystem. The ecosystem, you don't have as much agency in it, right? But you're basically fast-forwarding if you were going to do all this stuff yourself, right? It's even harder to write your own mesh stack or even your own... You know, OS, your own, you know, your own firmware loader, right? That's just a huge undertaking. And so, basically, if you're buying into the stuff, you just kind of got to take it sometimes. Mm. It's a tough thing. So, yeah, IoT is still hard. It really is.
I know.
Yeah.
Yep. And unnecessary a lot.
I don't know. So here's the thing. I've been working with someone, and I think that my paycheck for the next 10 years will be reducing industrial churn based on like humans, right? So taking humans out of the loop, which kind of sounds bad, but like as someone grows, this is how I'm telling myself, right? As someone grows and they want more like technicians, like that gets expensive, right? Having people in the loop is expensive. But if it's basically the technician is just like driving somewhere and like checking a reading on a device, that's like a really kind of a silly thing for a human to do, but it was just for a long time, that's all you could do.
Yeah.
And I think that's going to be my paycheck for the next 10 years, honestly.
Remote monitoring and automation.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't have to be devious. Yep. It doesn't have to be like, it's hopefully not silly, right? But I think that those kind of things have a very tangible, very easy value to show to like businesses that are like, oh yeah. And if people go back and listen to when Scott Miller was back on the show a couple months ago, he talked about this a lot. He actually took it a little bit even further where he talked about like, product as a service. So now instead of... showing someone like, hey, if you pay me this chunk of money or this much money per month for a service, then you know, I will sell you a device that will monitor all this stuff. Instead, he's like, well, you don't want to go out and check your meter, but if you just pay me $1 a month per meter, and we'll also, you know, the hardware's free. You know, that's like, that's what he talked about. And I think that that as well is going to be a very big thing. That may be a very big thing. I think that's
what we're trending
towards. Yeah, I think that's what we're trending towards. And so, yeah, that was a great episode too. So, go and check that out. IoT, Dave. I'm okay saying it now. That's for 2020.
Okay. I'm still not. No, I still get contacted by Internet of Things companies.
Yeah.
To review their latest Internet of Things widgets. Like, I just don't care.
I think I've just like normalized really enough to hearing it. And I'm like, yeah, whatever. You know, IoT just means money. That just means there's money somewhere in it.
maybe I'm just scarred from the whole craze from like 10 years ago where like Altium, for example, turned on a dime and said Internet of Things is the future.
Yeah,
right. You know, we're going to pivot our whole company on Internet of Things. It's like grown.
Yeah.
You know, that didn't work out for you, did it? No. Right, yeah, you know, it's like... Oh God! Can we talk briefly? Mention I've got. Can we have a fail of the week?
Sure.
It's not Shonky product of the week. It's just innovation fail of the week.
Okay, what do we got?
It's called
innovation
last
products
tissue.
Are usually a bad start.
I know. It's not an electronics thing. I'm sorry, but this was just so funny. I had to tweet it and put it on the forum as well. It's called Last Tissue.
Oh my God!
It's a Kickstarter. Have you seen it?
No, I'm looking at the picture right now.
Yeah. They've, you know, it's like this reusable tissue.
Oh,
it's like
it's a piece of
you've
cloth.
Invented the handkerchief.
That's right. Which are gross.
Literally invented the handkerchief. Yeah, they've invented the handkerchief, and they're marketing it as this new thing. It's like we're going to save the environment because you don't toss away your tissues. It's Oh.
Yeah, that's greenwashing. That's the term that I've learned recently. It's greenwashing.
Oh, what is it?
Greenwashing.
Greenwashing.
Yeah, so it's like you say that you're going to be there was a really good
Environmentally friendly.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. And so there's a really good episode of Patriot Act, which is a Netflix show by Hasan Minhaj, and he talks about greenwashing in the fashion industry, and I really really recommend it. I'll link it as well. But like basically it's used as a marketing term for like, oh, we're so
green.
Yeah, exactly. Eco-friendly, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And then, like, you actually look at what they're doing, and it's not.
Can we call it eco-woke?
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah.
Eco, I think I just invented a new term, eco-woke.
Eco-woke, I like that.
Yep.
Well, maybe we'll.
Eco-woke. Yep.
Maybe we'll name the article, the episode that.
the episode, eco-woke. Yeah. Maybe eco-woke fail.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, right.
But, anyways, yeah, that's. And I think that's kind of the thing that happens a lot. Especially in crowdfunding campaigns.
Oh, yes. No, they all try to.
Yeah.
You know, we're saving the planet. Yeah. It's like, yeah, good on you.
Yeah.
You know. Fry's Electronics is
Deadzo,
like,
huh?
Dying a very sad death. Although they claim. They claim that, oh, no, we aren't dead. We're financially fine. It's
just
we're going through a patch where we just can't get supply, you know, because they don't order stuff themselves directly from the manufacturer. Apparently they have some sort of like a broker managing agent who stocks all their stores, and apparently they're having trouble with those people, which is like the shelves are empty. And of course I'm sure you've been into a Fry's, right? I've been into several Fry's.
They don't have any where I am, actually. There are like there's a ton. When I go to California, I'll go out to one, but
but you've been into
Fry's.
Yes, I have.
And they're all themed, they're very fun
and they're themed underwater theme, Egyptian theme, or whatever. Is very cool.
I will lament them being gone. Like, whereas like Radio Shack was like, you know, obviously they were great back in the day, but then they just became like this like
maybe
monolith of like
70s, 80s.
Yeah, exactly.
No, exactly.
But like Fry's.
Whereas when I went into Fry's, last time I went into Fry's was 10 years ago, right?
Yeah.
And I was very impressed. Like they were selling, like you could buy, we literally bought like soldering iron wire parts.
Yep, exactly.
You know, also, and this is from like a big box electrical computer retail-y type store.
Right.
I was thoroughly impressed.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, exactly. And I think that is still a good place to have like some kind of retail of electronics kits with. Yeah, I think computer stores are the natural one with it. But I think just the realities of big box and just brick and mortar is just so tough. You know, it's just again hiring humans.
Because
you know?
we had to convert our hotel room into a lab.
Oh yeah,
you know, because
right.
we had to do last minute trade show stuff, and we didn't bring soldering irons and gear and you know meters and power supplies and stuff like that. You know, so we had to go literally buy a lab from Fry's and then go back to the hotel and set it all up.
You don't travel with traveling iron? You did it different now? I mean, surely.
Oh, it wasn't a thing back then. I would these days. But back then we thought we had it nailed, and sort of last minute we had to redo everything. So, nasty.
Yep.
Anyway, that's quite sad. But they claim they're not. I don't know if they like own their stores and they're not paying rent and so they can survive like that, but I've heard it's anyway, it looks terrible. It's just depressing to go through there with a camera. There's several people that have done it, and it's just and they stocked. I watched one guy's video where he like went through and it's all depressing and everything, and then one of the staff told him that all the stock went to Las Vegas for the CES show. There's a store near Las Vegas, so they wanted to make it appear as though they didn't have any problems. So they cannibalized all the other stores and shipped it in, so he went bugger this, I'm hopping on a plane, I'm going to Las Vegas, I'm going to check out this store, and sure enough it's all like fully stocked, you know, completely stock. So they kept up appearances for the CES show, which was funny. So
we kind of miss, I mean, so Christina talked about CES a little bit, but we didn't talk about, there's a new Arduino board as well.
Do we have to talk about
I'm
a
interested,
new Arduino board?
Well, I'm interested in it because it's getting on towards, it's getting closer to like a BeagleBone than it is, I mean, not quite, but it's, you know, the amount of stuff that they want to do with like JavaScript on it, it's pretty beefy. I mean, the H7 that's on there, so basically it's got a M4 and then like a Linux processor on board.
But it still runs the Arduino ecosystem, because the thing that makes an Arduino is not only the pinout, but it's also the fact that it interfaces with the and it runs, you know, it interfaces with the Arduino IDE.
That's right, yeah.
Basically, and then it compiles for, you can have, you know, a lot of people think it's only Atmel, but no, it can be, and Arduino can be microchip. There's microchip versions of Atmel. There's well, ARM versions of Arduinos.
All those things are actually the same these days. Arduino, or sorry, Atmel, microchip,
yeah,
and
but no,
and ARM
you,
are
you know,
all...
I'm talking about Atmel versus PIC. Right. Architectures, oh, totally different architectures,
right?
That's what I'm talking about.
You're saying
about.
There's like a PIC32-based Arduino.
Yes, yeah, there's a PIC32-based Arduino, yes, and correct. There's ARM-based Arduinos, and you can get Intel-based Arduinos. Yeah. Intel got into it, right?
Yeah, I don't think they're doing that anymore, but yeah. I think that's a good example. Like, it is getting closer maybe towards like an Intel Edison type of level of processing. Yep. Maybe, I don't know. It's like Cortex M7. So like, if you see like a high-end STM32 with like a display, anything that has a display usually has like in that level of like M7, you know, it's probably running RTOS still, but it's pretty beefy. So that's what's interesting to me, is that like they keep making it beefier and beefier, and this is also $99, so I'm also curious about, like, you know, are people willing to pay $99 for a Arduino, you know, so spanning the whole range of like super, super low end, you know, you could get like a, you know, a dollar based, you know, like you said, it's running like a ARM based micro or something super cheap off Taobao or AliExpress, or you can now pay $99 to run JavaScript or Python. I think it's true Python as well. Yeah, it's actually true Python instead of CircuitPython or MicroPython. And so it's like, no, this is targeted more at like software people that are trying to get into the hardware space more. So that's, I don't know. That's my wonkery for the week, I suppose, but I don't know.
Well, speaking of wonkery of the week, like, I've got a useless wonkery gadget that Google sent me for free.
Oh, yeah?
It's one of these Google Nest things. You know, it's like the Amazon Alexa thing, isn't it?
Yeah, that's like, right. Yeah, that's like a Google Home, but they rebranded it Nest.
It's a good Nest.
That's the one that I mentioned, actually, with the show with Christina, that it's the only smart one I have in my house anymore is in the bathroom, so I can shout what I want to listen to while I'm in the shower.
Oh, God, really? Yeah. That's pathetic. No, there's no way I'm plugging this in and giving Google microphone access to. I know they probably already have it, but I don't have like it enabled on my phone and shit like that.
Okay.
So yeah, if people have got ideas, it's one of these Google Nest Mini things.
Okay.
And it's the latest version. They send it for free.
I mean, I would just tear it down, you know, for sure. Like.
Well, yeah, but I want to like hack it into something. If people have got any good ideas, what I can turn it into.
Yeah. John, over at Predictable did a teardown of a Dot, Echo Dot. I mean, these have been torn down before, but that's another link I had in the notes this week.
Yeah, that's why I don't want to just do a teardown of this. They're like, meh.
Well, I think at the end of the day, like, it's going to be like, it's going to be directional, like four microphones or equivalent to, you know, get directional, you know, where's the sound coming from? And then it's like,
does it even care where the sound comes from?
It needs to be able to like do cancellation, so it's kind of like beam finding or beam forming rather.
Oh yeah, no, okay. So it's a microphone array, you think?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah. I don't know.
It's got DSP goodness, right?
Right. I don't know what to do with it at the end of the day. What you would want to do with it?
Anyway, that's why I'm asking. Yeah. Maybe someone's got a good idea to.
Speaking of asking, we should wrap up with our final ask of the show. If people are still listening, of course. We are looking for an editor. This is tied back to the
we are
changes for the new year. So we're we're interested in.
We figure our time is better spent doing other things than splicing audio clips together.
Right.
And you know, stuff like that.
Yeah.
So please, no tire kickers. We only want to we are looking for a professional who has done this before, i.e., audio podcasts. So we're looking for people who have a showcase of work doing editing audio podcasts.
Yeah, it's pretty specific. So, it's pretty specific, but
yeah, it's very specific. Yep, it's not hard work, but we want somebody who does it. Yep.
Yeah, so please send us a you know, a reference or two, or like what you've done in the past, and then if you have a sample, that'd be great. And then we'll set up a time to chat. You know, that would be great. It is a paid gig. Cool. If that is.
It is a paid. Yes, it is a paid gig. We won't pay you in merch or something like that. Right.
We'll pay him friendship. How about friendship, Dave? Can we really put a price on friendship? It's almost. It's worth infinite dollars. You know.
No, it's highly overrated. Nerds are very socially...
Some of us are more social than others.
Not quite there. Yeah, I know. Anyway, yeah, so yeah, please. Is there a special contact email or it's just
Yeah, they
email?
Can email editor@theamphour.com, which is a new email address.
New address?
Yep.
Awesome. Done.
Cool. All right. Well, we'll talk soon and more often.
Catch you next time.
See ya. Was that a good show?